Thank you very much, Carolina. I'm so glad that Fernando Monterosa and his colleagues from Francisco Marroquin University were so active in the development of this program, because I have the rank of visiting professor in the university and have been the recipient of an honorary doctorate from the university. And my paper today is drawing on the paper I presented at the Mount Pelerin Society meeting in Antigua, Guatemala in 1990. To give you a quick summary before I give the details of the paper, in the last two decades, historians have identified the causes of the West's success in liberty and wealth, medieval, legal, and political institutions. Those are the sources of our economic and political liberties. England and the United States preserved longest the medieval, legal, and political institutions, which accounts for their greater success in liberty and prosperity. Spain equally possessed these institutions, but at the moment of Spanish settlement in Mexico and Peru, it abandoned its medieval institutions for modernization. Modernization means bureaucratic, mercantilist, and most important, tax-gathering institutions. Latin America should re-examine Spain's medieval traditions of liberty and search for roots to gain the Anglo-American medieval role, the road to liberty and prosperity. One month ago, I was present for the Mount Pelerin Society meeting in Barcelona, in which some of the issues we're now discussing were presented. But present at the meeting was Marjorie Grice Hutchinson. She is a retired professor at the University of Malaga and had been Hayek's student at the University of London before going to Malaga, where she had written her dissertation on the School of Salamanca and on Spanish economic thought. And so when the first meeting of the Mount Pelerin Society in Spain was held in 1979, Hayek insisted that he would only speak at the University of Salamanca with Marjorie Grice Hutchinson in order for everyone in the world to see the importance of the School of Salamanca for his thinking and therefore for our thinking. Now, we're not going to deal with this topic of the School of Salamanca. My colleague, Alejandro Chafuin, has written on that, published by Ignatius Press, and that was a topic discussed in April at the meeting of the Society. Now, when the Castilians came to the New World, they encountered two massive centralized empires, the Aztecs and the Incas. These exploited the settled agricultural populations. Much to the envy of English colonists, the Spanish crown substituted itself for the Aztec and Inca rulers, while individual Spaniards gained the roles of receivers of part of the agricultural production of the native peoples. This was something the English wished they could have found in North America and didn't, and the result was a very different settlement situation. Iberia's legal and political institutions were the same as the rest of Europe's in the medieval period. Thus, on the eve of colonization, Spain shared all the institutions of Europe, including England. It is essential to identify those legal institutions and account for Spain's rejection of its medieval heritage. and its initiation of new absolutist institutions following the acquisitions of the Aztec and Inca sovereignties. Spain embarked on the creation of an absolutist state in Spain and in the colonies. England languished in its medieval heritage, and its medieval heritage was carried by the colonists to North America. The American Revolution was a successful struggle to retain the English medieval heritage when London itself seemed to move in the direction of absolutism. Montesquieu's defense of constitutional rights guaranteed by limitation on the expansion of government by the balance of power and separation of powers is a source of understanding the difference between the developments of South America and North America. Montesquieu's analysis emphasizes the importance to individual rights of the multiplicity, competition, and historic roots of political institutions. It is exactly in the context of Spain's struggle for liberation from Napoleon after 1808 that arose the first use of the word liberales. So liberal comes into our political language directly from the Cortes of Cadiz of 1812, and this was adopted by the French and English admirers of the Spanish vanguard. But this discussion leading to the concept of liberal in Spain's constitutional development had its roots already in the history of Spain and in the study by Spanish historians of that history. Spain had shared the liberation from Roman taxation and inflation when the Germanic tribes burst the Rhine frontier in 406 AD. The Visigothic settlers in Spain brought German concepts of assembly and constitutional contract. Our second speaker has written extensively on the Visigoths and will be able to add more on that particular issue. Now, once the Muslims had come to Spain in 711 and then were defeated at the Battle of Tours by Charles Martel in 732, they formed in Spain their own system of rule, except in the northern mountainous areas where the original Christian population regrouped and settled and created their own institutions. These included the inheritance of the Visigothic or Germanic ideas, which same thing as Anglo-Saxon ideas of the Germanic tribes that came at the same time to England. As time went on, these institutions were solidified such that, to give one example from Aragon and Catalonia, which I visited last month, at each coronation, the people would swear an oath, which was something like, "We, who are just as good as you, the king, swear to you, who are no better than we are, that we will obey you so long as you don't do anything inconsistent with what your fathers have done. And as soon as you do something inconsistent, you're out. Maybe dead." So it was very clear at each coronation the limits on royal authority. It's unfortunate that that later was replaced with the absolutism that occurred at the eve of the colonization of the New World. So the reciprocal acts, oaths of the kings required the kings to live up to their oaths, and if not, the population was absolved from their oaths. We find in the Fueros the traditional rights and independence from taxation of the medieval nobles, freemen, townsmen, and clergy, with roots in the Germanic tradition, foundations of modern rights ideas. English legal and constitutional history with the Magna Carta was parallel to the experiences in Spain, such as the Great Charter of 1020 issued by the Cortes of Leon. Unfamiliarity with the history of the Hispanic Pyrenean kingdoms could lead one to think that Spanish Christians were isolated from the mainstream of flowering European medieval civilization. The oath-sworn associations arising from the Peace of God movement in the 10th and 11th centuries were led and protected by the Cluniac monasteries. The great abbey of Cluny led a religious reform and then a political reform. Spain and Spanish monasteries were particularly linked to the abbey through the most important of the pilgrimage goals, the shrine in western Spain of Santiago de Compostela. Large numbers of pilgrims, often the people who had participated in the oath-sworn associations of the Peace of God movement, traveled to Compostela. Large numbers of monks similarly made that pilgrimage. So the Spanish Pyrenean kingdoms were inundated with the information of the representative institutions of town charters and provincial representation in medieval Europe. Conquest of the Kingdom of Granada in 1492 witnessed the establishment of absolutism, the core features of which was the end of the universal super political position of religion in Spanish and in the same period in Western society, so that the Church came under the control directly of the kings, and especially of the kings of Castile and Aragon. Just as the development of absolutism in Spain had such an important effect on South America's development since then, even we in America felt that this was something very threatening at a point when people in Spain and Latin America thought that it might be lessening. And that was in the end of the 19th century. The great American classical liberal, some ways maybe the greatest of the 19th century, Yale professor William Graham Sumner, in 1900, wrote his famous book, The Conquest of the United States by Spain. Sumner showed that while the U.S. conquered Spain's colonies, Spain's imperialist ideas had conquered the intellect of American politicians. So the distinguishing characteristics of European constitutionalism compared to Oriental despotism were lost with Spain's loss of its conquests in Asia and South America. But those methods were, in his opinion, being adopted by American politicians. That book is available in reprint from Henry Regnery and Company. The decline and political control of religious institutions in the 15th century by the political authorities undermine the foundations of European constitutionalism. Spain's access to the gold and silver of the Aztec and Inca despotisms made Spain the paymaster of European wars for a century and a half. Castilian infantry excelled throughout Europe, leaving Spain's monetary and human wealth in graves around Europe.
To achieve imperial greatness, Spain had to abandon the medieval free market and constitutional institutions. Now, it is true that Spain was not alone in abandoning medieval constitutionalism at that time. And during the 16th century, many English leaders attempted to achieve the same in England itself. But due to accidents, England was spared the loss of its medieval institutions. And therefore, on the eve of colonization of America, the colonists brought with them, as it were, as their baggage, the medieval constitutionalism from which we have benefited. Now, when the Castilians arrived in the New World and found these Indian sovereignties and took control of them, there was, as was mentioned by Bill Campbell earlier, a strong response against what the Spanish were doing. And the most important person in that regard was Bartolomé de las Casas. De las Casas was a Dominican bishop who went back to Spain and led a very important campaign, the result of which was to raise before the eyes of the professors at the universities. And Spain had just experienced a big expansion of universities. And so there was a very rich intellectual, humanistic background in Spain at the time. And the result was a big debate among the Spanish intellectuals, which, starting with Francisco de Vitoria and including 30 or 40 very important writers, contributed not only to the development of the idea of human rights, but in particular to the science, legal science of international law. And so that while, unfortunately, the regime in Spain and its colonies was pursuing a very deleterious trend, meanwhile, intellectually, Spain was experiencing a great renaissance, a great intellectual contribution, of which we are the beneficiaries. It is such an important and rich background that it's one, especially in before this audience, that cannot be emphasized too strongly, deserves a great deal more research and attention, especially in writing, and especially in a period when many Latin Americans have recognized how burdensome that tradition coming from Spain, on top of which in the 19th century was added Jeremy Bentham's ideas, which became so dominant in Latin America, and luckily was spared, we and the English were spared, because almost nothing he wrote was originally published in English. No one was interested, but it all got into French and Spanish. And Auguste Comte, who again had such an influence in Latin America. So these are areas, because we're seeing books trying to clear away the foliage, as it were, in order to understand why there have been problems in Latin America, why North America has had success. And history will give us a lot of information to help us clear our minds and clear the air on these issues. Thank you very much.